WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Columnist Roger Simon has been traveling around New Hampshire for the past 2 weeks, following the candidates and the voters for a syndicated column that originates at the Baltimore Sun. Simon flew back to Washington this morning and joined us to share his impressions of the first primary of the 1992 presidential campaign. This is the fifth presidential campaign that Simon has covered. Up in New Hampshire, Simon was struck by how little George Bush campaigned. I asked him to describe how the voters felt once Bush finally did show up.
Angry. All of us reporters gather what's called anecdotal evidence, non-scientific evidence, and we knew, all of us on the Bush bus, by talking to each other, but more importantly, talking to members of the crowds that came out for Bush, knew that Patrick Buchanan was going to do much better than the polls. We knew Bush was going to take it in the chops. We knew the polls were wrong, and it's because, one, the crowds were tiny, extremely small for a sitting president. Here's a man with the entire infrastructure of the White House campaign team at his disposal. He couldn't get 150 people in an airplane hangar in New Hampshire, even by busing a lot of them up from Massachusetts. And more importantly, when you went and talked to the people in his crowds, they were Pat Buchanan voters. They were Democrats who were there because their six-year-old wanted to see the president. Or they were people very, very angry with George Bush. Naturally, he had some supporters, but darn few.
How much of the vote for Buchanan was a protest vote against Bush or even against any of the other candidates?
To a large extent, it was a protest vote. The line was that they were using Pat Buchanan as a mailbox. The people of New Hampshire were sending a message to George Bush, and he got the message. Very few of the people in the crowds that I talked to, Buchanan crowds now, covered both candidates, of course, really either wanted or to a greater extent expected Pat Buchanan to be the nominee of the Republican Party.
How would you describe his style of campaigning? And what I think the rest of the nation saw in TV clips was a very enthusiastic audience.
Are you talking about Pat Buchanan now?
Yes.
Pat Buchanan is an excellent campaigner. Makes terrific eye contact with the audience. I know that might sound silly, but it's very important, especially in New Hampshire and other smaller states where you're talking to groups sometimes of 40 and 50 people, not 4,000 to 5,000 people. He knows how to simply work a haul from moving his body from left to center to right. His hand gestures, again, that sounds silly, but let's remember in 1980, when George Bush was first running for president, he went to gesture school in New York to learn how to make his gestures better. Pat Buchanan has terrific gestures. He is capable of pulling off phrases like, my friends, and making it sound not like a demagogue, but like a natural phrase of speech. The excellent speaker, I'm sure from a long time on the speaking circuit and, of course, on television. And quite frankly, he's a very powerful a man in person.
What do you think Pat Buchanan's showing will do to President Bush, who has said he will do anything to be president and is known for having some chameleon-like political stance? Do you expect him to move to the right?
I think that's what people say. That's sort of an easy analysis, but I don't expect it to be true. George Bush is going to be the nominee of the Republican Party. Pat Buchanan is not going to beat him. The Republican Party is not going to nominate Pat Buchanan for president. I'm sorry to disappoint his supporters, but it's simply not going to happen. Republicans, and I'll tell you the reason. It's called the Jesse Jackson effect. 4 years ago, Jesse Jackson did an amazing thing and won the Michigan caucus. And he was on the cover of Newsweek, Time, U.S. News and World Report, and every newspaper in the country. And as soon as people picked up those magazines and those newspapers and turned on their radios and TVs and thought, my God, Jesse Jackson could really win this thing, Jesse Jackson never won another primary. As soon as Pat Buchanan, let's say he beats George Bush in a few more states, that is going to scare Republicans into thinking, number one, he might defeat George Bush and we might have to have a Buchanan versus the Democrat, which would doom us in the fall. Or number two, we might damage George Bush so much in the primary process that even if he is nominated, he will lose to the Democrat. So in a sense, the better Pat Buchanan does from now on, the less of a chance he has of actually winning this thing.
I'm speaking with Roger Simon, and he's a nationally syndicated columnist for the Baltimore Sun, and he's been covering politics for some years now. In fact, started covering presidential politics back in 1976. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Roger Simon. He's a nationally syndicated columnist for the Baltimore Sun, and he's just returned from New Hampshire, where he spent the last 2 weeks following presidential candidates around the country, around the state, rather, for their primary. How do you think Tsongas is going to play around the rest of the country?
Boy, that's the big unknown. At first glance, you would think this guy doesn't have a chance. He's Greek and from Massachusetts. Not only that, but he's had cancer, although his doctor assures everybody he's completely over it now. Does the Democratic Party really need those three things? And then you go beyond that, and in a traditional sense, he is non-charismatic. I happen to find him personally having sort of an anti-charisma that has its own kind of attraction and charm, if you will.
Do you think that's what the voters of New Hampshire got attracted to, his non-charisma charisma?
Yes, I think he really won them over. And let's not forget, he was a senator from a neighboring state. He has lived all his life in Lowell, Massachusetts, which is not far from New Hampshire. He was able to transport quite a few Massachusetts residents into New Hampshire. Tens of thousands of Massachusetts citizens have moved to New Hampshire to escape taxes and have carried their old loyalties with him. But beyond that, the people in his crowds find his non-blow-dried looks, his candor, his promise, not of easy times, but of tough times, they find it refreshing. If the rest of the nation finds it refreshing, he's going to do well. If the rest of the nation says, however, gee, he doesn't look that good, and he speaks kind of with a funny speech defect, and why should I vote for any man who promises me hard times? Well, then his campaign is going to fail very shortly. Maryland, on March 3rd, is going to be a big test of Tsongas.
This is a race in which two people who came in second, Clinton and Buchanan, declared themselves winners. Is this sort of an odd thing, or is this just what politicians do?
It's not just what politicians do. It's what the press aids them in. It's the expectations game, not what did you win. We all know that Bush won, and actually he won by a pretty convincing margin, about 18 points. Tsongas won by 8 points. But the fact that Clinton had come back to do better than expected, the fact that that Buchanan did much better than expected, the fact that all the polls were wrong in terms of what they were showing, leads to this impression that they are, in a sense, victors. And if you were in New Hampshire and watched TV or listened to radio on primary night, in fact, you heard 7 victory speeches. Nobody in this race is conceding anything. Jerry Brown finished last with 9%, but he can honestly say he spent no money. He had almost no organization. All he had was that 800 number, and he was within a few points of Kerry and Harkin, who spent a lot of money.
Now, you've been in New Hampshire for 2 weeks. Can you tell us about, if anybody there turned on their radio at any time, was it politics, politics, politics? Same with television and the newspaper?
Yes. New Hampshire is again, I said idiosyncratic, and that's true. People are really into politics in New Hampshire. The only state, I'm sure there are other states, but the only state that I think is similar from my personal experience is Illinois, especially Chicago, where politics is a spectator sport. You grow up reading about politics the same way you read about football or baseball or basketball.
So literally there were politicians and their aides and their handlers and their spin doctors just crawling all over New Hampshire?
Yes, it was an amazing scene on the streets in the last couple of days, where the campaigns decided to just get masses of volunteers to go on street corners and at exit ramps of the expressway with their signs and just wave them at each other. But since you had seven major campaigns, and I might add there were 62 presidential names on the ballot when you count the minor candidates, you had these huge crushes of people just madly waving different colored signs at each other from across street corners. It had a festive air. The press rarely writes about it, but New Hampshire is fun. We have a good time up there. I know the press tends to be sort of sardonic and sarcastic about what it does for a living, but It is a kick to be able to get out of bed and grab any candidate you want.
Well, now, would you say the candidates, all 62 of them, were having fun? We can think about the TV appearances, of course, with the makeup and the nice lighting and perhaps a good night's sleep beforehand. But what were some of the bleary-eyed candidate experiences that you saw?
Well, they're all sick, and they always get sick. I don't mean seriously ill, but if you've ever done a back of the limousine or back of the car interview with the candidates, which is a common way of getting an interview as he goes from one stop to the other, the back of all these cars look like pharmacies. There is every nostrum, every over-the-counter cold remedy you have ever seen. There are tissues and cough drops, and it's a grueling, extremely grueling experience for them, with the exception, I might add, of Paul Tsongas, who took it rather easy. He was criticized for it, but he had, in the last critical days, he almost stopped campaigning, and he had a very easy last day. And when asked why, he said, look, I spent time with my family, I spent time reading a book, I spent time thinking about the issues, and that's the way I'm going to campaign. Naturally, there were questions raised as to his health. He said, absolutely not. I'm no more sick than any of the other candidates in terms of being hoarse or in terms of having a cough. And his doctor backed him up on it. I think in retrospect, he might campaign a little more energetically in the future.
Journalist and columnist Roger Simon is my guest. Is it too early to tell in this 92 election campaign to see whether there's some comparisons you can make with the 88 election campaign?
It's not too early to tell in the case of George Bush. George Bush was in real trouble in 1988. He had lost Iowa. If he had lost New Hampshire, he would have been eliminated from the race. So in the space of about 48 hours, he was reshaped and retooled. He was no longer the patrician son of a U.S. senator who liked to drink martinis and play golf. All of a sudden, he was a guy who played horseshoes and ate pork rinds. And they fashioned him into the regular guy. They ran what's called the See Me, Touch Me, Feel Me campaign. They dropped the ropes. People got close to him. The Secret Service moved back. Bush took off, literally, his jacket and tie. He wore sweaters. He wore a Patagonia windbreaker, which was lined with Kevlar. But one of the worst things you can have in a campaign is called TMBS, too many blue suits. And he got the blue suits away. Well, after he won, that was no longer a problem. We don't really expect our presidents to be regular guys. Horseshoes disappeared. He plays golf. He goes out on his speedboat. He doesn't eat pork rinds anymore. When he lands in Air Force One. He has many, many blue suits. But in New Hampshire, and usually that's fine. That's the aura of the office, and it can't even help you. But in New Hampshire, where times are rough and people are out of work, and people are losing their homes through foreclosure, they resented the trappings of power. And there was no way, after 4 years of being a sitting president under extreme scrutiny, that George Bush can reshape himself again. Now he is what he is, and he's either going to have to stand or fall on it.
You've been involved as a columnist, reporter, in presidential campaigns for almost 20 years now. Does New Hampshire have anything to do with the rest of the country?
No, not really. I'm sorry. It's a very nice place.
You just spent 2 weeks there.
And I'm there every 4 years. It is a very nice place. The people are charming. It is a beautiful state. It has virtually no minorities in it. It's now considerably worse off than the rest of the nation. 4 years ago, it was considerably better off than the rest of the nation. It lacks large cities. There are many states, many, many states that are far more representative of the nation as a whole than New Hampshire. But somebody has to be first. New Hampshire is it. It's where the press is going to begin, and it's where most of us go to begin. But we should really keep in mind that this is a very long process. We have elected, or the people of New Hampshire have elected 18 out of the 4,200 delegates necessary, and consumers of news, listeners, viewers, readers, should not be whipsawed back and forth by headlines and sound bites. They should see this as a long process that's going to go on to June 2nd and possibly beyond.
You said that New Hampshire residents love, they live politics. Do you think they're also glad to be rid of you and all those politicians?
Yeah, I think so.
Get back to normal?
Not just us, but not just the press, but you're right about the politicians. They get phone calls from all all the candidates. If you're a registered Democrat, you're going to get 20 to 50 phone calls. You're going to get people knocking on your door. You're going to get people going to your plant gate. Then those are just candidates and their surrogates. Then you get the press on top of it. I think New Hampshire gets about $100 million from the press every 4 years, and they certainly like that. But they're real happy we're gone right now.
Roger Simon, thank you for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Roger Simon's a nationally syndicated columnist for the Baltimore Sun.